Hi, everyone. My name is Carol King, and I'm an alcoholic. When Jeff called me and asked me to speak last week, I said yes right away, and I said, you know, I always have to say yes, especially to this, because I've been around a little while, and sometimes when you've been around a lot of years, maybe I would forget where I came from and how bad my life had been. And so whenever I'm asked to speak, I have to go back to those days and I have to remember what life was like. And plus, one thing I have learned, among other things in the program, I feel very, very grateful for everything that has been given to me in this program. And so when I'm asked to do something, I really try to do that. My sobriety date is August the 5th, 1968, and I have 47 years of sobriety this year. Thank you. And I belong to the same home group for most of those years. So they call me the matriarch, but that's not fair because I'm not really the matriarch there at all. I'm just kidding. The first lead I ever gave, I have a feeling you're going to have to postpone your group conscience meeting, because on my first lead I spoke for an hour and a half. But I've gotten a lot better, so I never go over the time. I'm just kidding. Back to the beginning. I don't have to go way, way back to things that happened when I was a child, except to say that I was a good kid and I never gave my mother any problems. I behaved myself and I was okay. Got married, had four kids, had a husband that drank. None of that really had anything to do with me becoming an alcoholic, but I was 22 or 23 and I lived in California in a place called Redondo Beach. Nice place. I worked in a very nice restaurant called the Lobster House. And that was my first introduction to being out in the world, because I was always at home and I had to take care of my children. So the social drinking started. And I believe that I was a social drinker from the beginning, or in the beginning. The girls would go out, I would go too once in a while. And that was how everything started for me. It did not take long, maybe 6 years. And within 6 years of going out and thinking I was having a good time, which I probably was for a while, after 6 years, my life got so bad that I didn't know that I didn't care about anything. I didn't even realize that I wasn't paying attention to my kids. I didn't really know that I was drinking to excess, and I obviously didn't know that I had a drinking problem. I just thought, as things got worse, I would go out at night and get very drunk, and I would come home and I would feel very bad, and I thought, I'm not going to do this tomorrow. I'm not going to get that drunk tomorrow. And after 3 or 4 years, I had no control over it anymore, because the alcohol got to me, alcoholism was getting to me, and it didn't take long, as I said, it only took about 6 years. So to start out having a good time and having fun, after about 6 years, my husband left and moved to Erie. Lots of things were going on. I was not in a good place. I would get so drunk that I would end up in places that I can't tell you about today. I went to work in a bar because that wonderful Lobster House fired me. I got so drunk I'd go in and make an idiot of myself, and so they said, we don't need you anymore. And when my husband left, he was having a big drinking problem himself, but I didn't care because I was able to do what I want. I could go out and stay out as late as I wanted. By the time I got home, he was passed out. So when he decided he didn't need his family anymore and left to come here, I didn't care. I thought, I can just do what I want now. I don't have to answer to him. And the drinking was getting much, much worse. Got fired from the job. When he left, I had no money. I had no job. And I drank. And I didn't know how to get money to drink or to feed those kids. But if you lived in Redondo Beach ever, every other block there's a bar everywhere. You could walk to all the bars around in that town. And I knew all the bartenders. So at that point, I was going to every bar once a day and borrowing, I can't even believe this, $2. And in those days, which goes way, way back, I could buy milk and cereal for the kids for the day and my entrance to the bar that night. And that's where the drinking and where my life was beginning to take me. And it reached a point where the bartenders didn't want to even loan me the $2 anymore because I was in there every day. But my husband isolated me, and I let him isolate me where I hadn't been in touch with my family, who lived in Ontario, California. But things got so bad. Tim, can you hear me? Oh, thank you. Things got so bad that I had to call my parents to come and get me, so they did. So now I find myself in Ontario, California, staying with my mother. Four kids and myself are in one bedroom. My parents don't have any idea that I have a problem. I was hiding the vodka bottles in the drawers. My father, in all the years I was sober, never believed that. He said to me, well, now that you've gotten rid of the problem, you should be able to drink wine once in a while. And the problem was my husband that I got rid of. He thought once that was gone, I should be just fine. I didn't have to explain to him. That was okay. So I decided I needed to get an apartment and get another job. And now I'm in Cucamonga, California. Don't ever drink the wine there if you ever decide to go out and drink again. Their wine was horrible. And I got a job working as a bartender and a waitress there. So now I'm able to move out of my mother's house, and I don't have to be under her eyes, and I can do what I want. So we were living up in Cucamonga, and I want to say that was probably the last year, and that last year was not good at all. I would drink every day. Most of the time I only work lunches, so I would drink every day, and usually the bartender would drive me home after I was loaded, and I would just pass out. My kids were now 9, 8, 6, and 5. And my oldest daughter took care of everybody. I didn't feed them. I didn't bathe them. I was just on the couch. And the place I worked in, I remember they had a little old lady, yeah, about where I am now. She was an old lady then. And I used to say to the bartender, that little lady over there, she's in here every day drinking, and she's so quiet. Who is she anyway? And they said, well, she's a nice little old lady that gets drunk every night and leaves her kids alone every night. And I thought, I know I drink a little, but if I ever got that bad, haven't we all been through that? If I ever got that bad, I would never do that to my kids. And you know the rest of the story, because it started to happen. And I was doing that all the time and leaving my kids alone all the time. Fortunately, nothing bad happened to them. And I don't want to say I didn't care about them. I love them. But the alcohol and the alcoholism had got me. And that was the most important thing in the world to me. I just didn't know it. Bartenders were telling me, Carol, how about a cup of coffee today? I thought, or why don't you have a vodka and orange juice in a tall glass? You know, there were hints all along. I had no idea. I had no idea that this alcohol had gotten to me and I had become an alcoholic. So now I'm 26, 27 years old. I'm working at this place for about 6 months, and I get a phone call from my wonderful husband in Erie, Pennsylvania, who said, why don't you come back to Erie and we'll start life all over again? Well, I immediately said yes for several reasons. One of them was I was drunk when I answered the phone. The other one was about a month before I had stolen a blouse from Kmart because it was St. Patrick's Day and we needed to wear something green. I could have borrowed it from Beverly, but I didn't have anything green. And so I stole this and I got caught. And my mother worked as a girl at one of the stores, and I thought, she's going to find this out, and oh my God. Well, I was due to go to court. Shortly after, my husband called and said, "You want to come back to Erie?" Well, of course I wanted to come back to Erie. So I packed up a duffel bag. That's all we had. In all those years we were together, my family and I had one duffel bag. Found myself back in Erie. I had no idea why I was here. I had no idea that I had a problem. I had no idea that my life was even a mess. I just knew I wasn't happy. And of course, unconsciously or consciously, I probably blamed it on him. And maybe even blamed it on the fact that I was so young and I had all these kids and I had all this responsibility. And he was a jerk. And he really was. But none of that was his fault. The alcohol just got me, like it does all of us that are here. So, now I start. Now, I'm living up in Baldwin Gardens Apartments, when it was still Baldwin Gardens Apartments, and we were going to start a life together. And he and I went out for my birthday, that first summer that I was here. And he dropped me off at the house. He said, "Get out of the car." I said, "Why?" He said, "I'm going to go live with somebody that likes me more than you do." And I thought, okay then. So he left. And I was up in the Baldwin Gardens Apartments with no job, no money, no anything. And I ended up getting a job at Frederico's on 18th Street, if any of you remember that place. And I got very friendly with the owner, who used to let me take bottles of vodka home, because I hadn't had much to drink that first month. And so I started drinking vodka at home. And it had gotten so bad that I could drink half a bottle of vodka at night. And I could, you know how we don't get drunk? After we reach a certain point, you get mad. How come I can't just not feel this anymore? I was trying to just forget my life and what was going on, and it wasn't happening. So, I have to tell you how it was. My husband even called me. Say, I think this is not ironic. I think this is power greater than myself working in my life, and I really believe this. Jim W., that most of you probably know, decided to become my husband's sponsor because he was going to meetings once in a while. And Jim had said to him, "You have a family somewhere?" "Yeah." "You have a family in California?" "Yeah." "Do you have kids?" "Uh-huh." And Jim W. said, "If you want me to sponsor your ass, sponsor you, you better call that wife of yours and get her back here with that family and become responsible." That is actually how I found myself back in Erie, or I never would have gotten here. So I know that's the power greater than myself working in my life for me. So the condition of my husband seeing the kids, he had a girlfriend, and I said, "You can take the kids, but I don't want the girlfriend around my kids." Okay. So he took them somewhere one Sunday. And I had a daughter she always told on everybody. They came home one Sunday and she came running up the stairs, "Mom, Mom, Mom, Daddy, we got to meet his new girlfriend." And the only reason I'm mentioning that was I was so angry and upset with him that I ran down the stairs that Sunday afternoon or evening and I said, "I asked you not to do that. Now, I want you to drive me over to the Veterans Hospital." I'd been to a couple of meetings with him. My intention was, I knew the Seidenberger Club was open on Sundays and I was on my way. I was gonna go. So, he dropped me off over there. And when I walked in the place, I started to cry for the whole meeting. And Dan B., I think, was the secretary, and he told me years later what a mess I was. I still had no idea that drinking was my problem. I'm just letting you know how we built up to this. So I walk in the coffee area, and Joe Quirk and Jim Clark were having coffee. And they looked at me and said, "What's the matter, kid?" I wonder how they knew anything was wrong, but we sat down and we talked for about 2 hours about what I do not know. Had nothing to do with my drinking. I was just not in a good place. So they drove me home and said, "There's a meeting on Monday night at the hospital. Why don't you come?" So the next day, I walked around my living room in my pajamas all day. I had no feeling of going anywhere. I was a mess, really. And I hadn't been drinking at that point too much, and I really needed to, actually. So one thing came to my mind that day. Why would anybody, these two guys, care about me? Why would they care about anything that happened to me? They don't know me. They don't know me. But we know in this room this is what we do, don't we? But I had no idea. So by the end of that day, I thought, I guess I'll just go. Nobody has cared about me forever, which was not anybody's fault but my own. My own. So I got myself to that meeting, and there were the guys. What really was exciting was Todd Daly was there, and all the rest of the guys in that meeting were old farts like the rest of you are right now, but Todd Daly was young. And I looked around the room and I thought, well, he's young, because I was only 28. And there weren't very many women. In fact, there were probably no women that had been sober a while. And so I introduced myself, and I didn't even know why. All I'm telling you now is that's how I built up to finding my way into these rooms with no intention of staying, with no idea that I had a problem. The only reason I was there that day and other days later was that somebody acted like they cared about what happened to me. And that's why for a while I kept coming back. They invited me to go down to the Young at Heart meeting. Oh, that goofy place. They had wooden chairs and checkered floors. And I used to sit there like this, and I would count the squares. Oh my God, I didn't even know why I was there. Why I didn't have any place else to go. And so for a long time, the guys just kept inviting me back. You have to understand, too, there were no women. I think there was Geraldine Sontheimer and a couple of others, and they were busy sponsoring people. So I had to hang on to those guys. And at that meeting that I went to, the Young at Heart meeting, there were 7 or 8 guys and me. And they started me and helped me to think something good about myself, but nobody talked about alcoholism yet. I wasn't ready, and they knew I wasn't ready. However, after they had a year, they celebrated a year, they wanted to get me to the point where I felt like I belonged. So they asked me to make a cake. Why are you laughing, Beverly? They asked me to make a cake, and it was a box cake, an egg and water, and put it in the oven. And when I took it out, it was hard as a rock. It was hard as a rock. I think they brought another one just in case, because I wasn't really, you know, I really wasn't with it. I was only sober, I forget, I don't even know, 8 or 9 months. And we had real cups there, and they asked me one day, you're in charge of the cups. That doesn't seem like a big deal, does it? It was a big deal to me. It was a big deal to me because I didn't think anything of myself. My life was just a mess. And to think that these people got enough of me to let me, even after I screwed up the cake, to let me wash these cups. And what it was doing was it was helping me to fit in and to belong somewhere. After about 2 months, Jim Clark sat me down one day and said, I think we need to talk. Well, what do you want to talk about? He said, well, do you think you might be an alcoholic? I did not know that. I did not know that. You know that old saying, you're only half an alcoholic? I said, well, maybe I'm just... I did not believe that I really belonged here. I thought for months that when they found out I really wasn't an alcoholic, they would kick me out. And I really thought that. I really did. So when he talked to me and asked me what I thought, I said, I don't know. And then he gave me an option. Okay, you can be willing and go with us, or do you want to go back to that life you had in California? And I had been in these rooms long enough to know that I absolutely did not want to go back to that horrible life I had in California. What I was doing then at the meetings was not all that exciting, let me tell you. I'd sit there at the meetings week after week and look at all you guys, and not know what I was going to do. And finally, Jim said to me one day, I said, what am I going to do? Just sit here till forever and just stay sober forever and then die? But that was my thinking. I just was not in a good place. So he said, well, why don't you go to school? Why don't you do something? But you know, that all took a while. It all took a while for me to realize that I belonged here. And I used to go to the meeting on Monday night, and I can't even think of his name now. Okay, Beverly, who was the guy that drank canned heat and bay rum and for years and years? No, not
Paul Simpson.
No. Never mind. Whoever it was at the meeting on Monday nights. Andy, thank you. Andy Daniels Sr. And he would stand up at the meeting and say, I drank that canned heat and bay rum, and I was in jail 27,000 times. And I'm sitting there next to him. I'm 68 years old, and I'm looking at him and I'm going, if he's an alcoholic, how could I possibly be? See, I had no idea that it had nothing to do with how much I drank or how long I drank. It took a while for me to realize that it was what it was doing to me up here that made me become an alcoholic. And you know, it took me also a while to realize that our alcohol is just a symptom of something else. That took a while. That took a while when I had to do the inventory that I was asked to do for months. And Jim would always say, how's that inventory going? Fine, I'm working on it. That took about 6 months, and finally I got tired of him asking me, so I started working on it. And I had a sheet of paper like this, and I made a list, and I started with when I got married, and I put little marks on that about some of the things I had done. They weren't words or sentences, they were X's and O's. Stop it. And then the next year, I kept adding things to it about things that I had done that I was not proud of. And I began to realize that some of those things took place long before I took my first drink. And that showed me that the alcoholism is just a symptom of something else. So after I did all this, this is how goofy I was, oh my God. Jim says, how's that inventory going? Here it is. There was nothing on it but X's and O's. How in the heck would he even know what was on there? But he gave it back to me, and I felt, well, I have now done the fourth step. Things started to get a lot better. You know, after I made that cake, that was a disaster. By the way, most of you know, I still make desserts at my meeting now every week, and I love it. I love doing that. But after that happened, you know, my kids for months after I came into AA ate SpaghettiOs out of a can. I wasn't able to do much for them yet. I love them, but I wasn't able to do much for them. I was really just trying to get myself together. But after that cake, for no reason at all, we decided one Sunday, let's make dinner and let's all eat together. My family, my kids and I don't think we had ever sat down together as a family. That was important to me, maybe not so much to them. But see, I was beginning to learn how to love them. I hadn't been able to do that, and I hadn't done that for a lot of years. So I was beginning to be able to do some of that. So now I'm going to school. I wrote a letter to Gannon University. They're not going to accept me. I didn't feel good enough. I didn't think I was capable of doing much of anything. So I get this letter back that says, you've been accepted to Gannon University. You know, I had one of my first classes there with you. Well, I called Jim and I said, they sent the wrong letter to me. I don't deserve to go to college. I don't know enough to go to college. And I did. And I went. And I got my bachelor's degree in teaching with a lot of help from a lot of my friends, but I was able to do that. And that was wonderful. In the meantime, I had met Kenny King, and he was sober. He came in a year after I did. And he became actually my best friend, and he was very, very good, and we had gotten married several years later. So we started a meeting over at the Luther Memorial Church in the middle of all of this. And that turned out to be a very, very wonderful place and a lot of good memories there with my husband and I. So now I'm going to get a job as a teacher. And I live down at Ferncliff Beach, which is, my house is not high class, but I'll tell you what, it's got the best view in the whole world. And Kenny had bought that cottage many, many years ago. And I still live there today. So now I'm teaching, and my kids are growing up, and I'm feeling pretty good. And Kenny and I decided we needed to get involved in some kind of service. It's not for everybody. I'm just letting you know where my life got to. And so there was no service structure in Erie at that time. So we drove down to Meadville, and we got involved in service, and we went to a meeting down in Indiana, Pennsylvania. We knew nothing. We just wanted to find out. We get down there, and Franny Flack was the chairman, and he said, any old business? No. Any new business? No. They closed the meeting in 10 minutes. Kenny and I sat there and said, this is not very exciting, is it? But that's how we got involved in service, and my husband became the delegate to Western Pennsylvania. I think it was panel 33. And then later on, I became the delegate too. The reason I bring that up is when I went to that meeting in New York, there were 90-something delegates there from all over the world making policy for AA. And do you know what I was thinking when I walked in that room? I was so humble, and I started to cry, and I thought, how is it me, this nobody that didn't feel good enough to be anything, is in this place, and people entrusted me in Pennsylvania to go to this thing. It was one of the best experiences I have ever had. And so I got involved in service in that way. But you know, service has a lot of names, but service is anything. Service is saying hello to people at the door. Service is making coffee, making dessert like I do. There's a lot of ways that people can be of service. And I think that's a wonderful thing to be, because there is no way I could ever repay or give back what has been given to me through this program. It has led me in the right direction. You know, I have worked the steps. I have done the best that I could. But by the way, when it got to step three, step three was turn your life and your will over to the care of God. I used to say to the guys at the meeting, what does that mean? How do I know what God wants me to do? And I was serious. How do I know? Till finally they get so tired of hearing me, they said, Carol, if you're doing the best you can today, then you know that you're doing what God's will is for you. And then I was okay with that. It took me quite a while to get through some of those steps. You know, we have to make amends to people. My mother, about 5 years ago, I know I'm flipping back and forth here, but that's okay. My mother died 5 years ago of cancer, and when she called me 6 months before she died, she said, well, Carol, I want you to know that I have brain cancer, and the doctor gave me 6 months to live. So I hung up the phone, and I had to call her back, because, you know, when I was 17, I ran away and got married. And I broke my mother's heart, I know that. So I had to call her back. Mom, I'm so sorry that I ran away and got married. I feel so bad. And she started to laugh. She started to laugh. So now here I am making amends all those years later. But one of the things I feel that has been really good for me is that I had the ability to be willing to do whatever was asked of me. I really was. I don't think I question, and I'm not anybody that does, please don't, I'm not trying to criticize anything, but it made it easier for me that I was able to just, whatever they said to do, I did it. Because how could I go wrong? The people in this room knew a hell of a lot more than I did. You know, I'm just bumbling along. You know, and after a while, after I got it 3 or 4 or 5 years in, it felt really, really good. It felt really, really good that I had an education, my kids were doing okay, I had a place to live, I'm driving a car, and I want to say 5 or 10 years before that, I was awful. It was terrible. So thank goodness to Jim White, who made my husband call me to get me back here to this town, because I was on the road to really dying, maybe, because the drinking had gotten that bad. And so anyway, I said in the beginning that I'm very grateful, and I am. And truthfully, there's a lot more that I would like to tell you, but I've already gotten to the end of the story, and if that's the worst thing in the world, you certainly don't want somebody just dragging it on till 7:30 because we have something to say. But I think those of you that know me, I feel really, really good being here. I feel really, really good that I have been able to get, I don't want to say this much sobriety, because this new guy, where's that new guy? That new guy, you're the most important person here, not me, you are. You've got everything ahead of you, and don't you dare leave. You stay here. Stay here before, or I'll be calling you on the phone. No, but really, there'll be times, there were times when I just thought, what the hell is this? You know, I did. Many times I thought, I don't want to just sit in this room. You guys were so old in those days. And I didn't know where my life was going to go. But my life has gone and came around to being a very beautiful life for me. And it's because of this fellowship. Thank God for those guys that found this, right? That we can be happy as we are. Thank you.
Carol.